would be our theme for the weekend. And I thought, it'd be an excellent theme, you know. The theme on sexuality would be a take two to be Jesus. And I used it very many times. When I would send, when they would go away, I would holler, "It takes two to be Jesus!" And they didn't know all my reasons for saying it, nor did I. And it was one of the best retreats we had. We stopped to eat, and they all went in a back tiny room, and just jammed in this room. The proprietor said, "Why don't you get these kids out here and eat, where we've got more room? They're taking chairs and they're sitting to close." I said, "I don't know. I think they just want to be together." And I realized that the agenda was being set all along the way. You know, the foot washing of some sort or another was on its way. We got there, and they had, some of them had been there the year before, so there was a lot of recollection. And then at 10:15 at night, I said, "Now let's go out to pray." You know, it was about 10 degrees above zero, and it was beautiful. It had been a beautiful snowfall. And they said, "Why do we have to go out there to pray when we can pray in here where it's warm?" And I said, "That's the point. You can always pray where it's warm, but why don't we once go out and pray where it's very cold?" And I reminded them that the year before we had gone out on a lake to pray, walked on the water in the winter, and this was a real experience for some of them. This is their highest identification with the Lord for the year. And I remember, too, that one girl had just gotten out of the swimming pool, and when we went down there, her hair was just frozen solid when we got down there to have the prayer session. And I remember, too, that as we were down there singing by one of the fishing shacks, some people who were living up in the hill thought we were raiding this fishing shack. So all the while we were praying, they were hollering at us, and then they came running down the hill. And it was quite an experience for these men to find out that we were all down there praying. And I remember how we kept this girl warm. And I remember how cold I got keeping her warm all the way back. So this is the second year, and they said, "Well, what do we use out there to pray, you know?" And I said, "Well, you know, we'll see." So I went ahead of them just a few minutes, and since it was take two to be Jesus, I had two candles with me. And that was kind of my rig for the weekend, two candles and some matches. And I looked at this beautiful snow mound, and I just took my finger and drew a circle and put these two candles right in the middle of it, and it was just perfect. I thought, you know, an architect couldn't have planned a better one. It was just beautiful. It was beautiful. It was there it was. There were the trees, and the sky. And this building project hadn't cost us a penny, and it wasn't heated too well, but we weren't going to stay too long. So we came out there, and I had our fuse at two marked. It is about 6 or 8 feet away. We sit in a circle around it, and I simply said, "It takes two to be Jesus, and here is the altar." But they all could see that it was an altar. That was pretty obvious. Now I said, "Our service is very simple. I have been listening to you. The first part of our service is love, hate, and the second part of our service is love. It's very simple. We don't need a bulletin, nothing. Just remember, the first part is hate, and the second part is love." And I've been listening to John all the way up, and then John doesn't like a lot of things, and I think he could lead us in the hate section, part one. John said he would, because he felt very much like that. He wanted to know what to do. And I said, "Well, all you need to do, John, is blow out the candle from where you stand." That was a very simple thing. He blew and blew, got redder and redder and madder and madder, and he hated not only his mother and father, whom he had talked about, he now hated me for asking. He was very angry, so all of the worshippers began to assist him in this session, and they blew. I never said a word. They just blew and blew and blew, and the candle just kind of waved a little. Finally, John just went on, did the next thing that was not printed in the bulletin, and he got a snowball. And all the while I'm thinking, here's an altar, and John's got a snowball, what's going to happen? And he began to throw at the candle. And then they all began to throw, and John missed, everybody missed. It was kind of an exciting thing because nobody was hitting, but the poor altar space was getting demolished. It was about the same time that we had Hamburger Hill, remember? In the newspaper and stuff? And I thought of that, and it was the same time that Simon and Garfunkel had Silent Night, Holy Night over the news. And we are, and so while they were filling them, all of a sudden one candle went down and went, boom. And one girl just screamed. She said, "You don't have to kill us." And they just kept throwing, you know, until the second one was down. Not a word. But the altar, you know, the altar was a mess. The altar girl would have been embarrassed. They would have complained to the church council. That, well, the whole thing was just mess. And while we stood there and saw it, you know, the first thing that came to my mind was Hamburger Hill, Simon Garfunkel. What would I do? I hum. And I said, "Hum with me." We hum Silent Night, Holy Night, just looking. You know, it's just a fantastic experience. And then the second part of the service went very quickly. And that is, we filled that night air with as many love phrases as we could and phrases of forgiveness went in. On the way, by the way, when we came out of that restaurant, the girl said, I said, "Hey, we're having communion when we're up there. I've got the wine, but I haven't any bread." And two girls said, "Let's get some." I said, "That's beautiful, because I wouldn't want to buy communion bread alone. You don't prepare alone." So I said, "Let's get some bread." And we went over there. I said, "Let's get some black bread." They said, "Black bread?" I said, "Sure. Black bread. Just beautiful black bread." And they said, "Well, but how can you eat black bread?" And I remember that Roland Bainton had said here at Holden that in Lucy's day they didn't have white bread, they probably only had black bread. And this made it, so I explained that. That made them feel very good that we were going to have good old Lucy and black bread and communion for the first time in their life. And then one girl said, "Oh, I love butter on black bread. Could we have butter too?" Well, I was sorry that I'd raised the whole situation. And I wondered if one could have bread and butter and wine, or if one had to erase the butter. So when we got in there, they found a great big loaf of black bread all sliced up, and they came running and they said, "Here it is." I said, "I cannot use it. It's sliced." They understood perfectly and they went scrounging, and all of a sudden the girl ran. I found it, screw. So there it was, she said, "And we don't even need the butter." So we had this big round strudel, all the icing and everything on it. And I said, "Do we have to cut off the icing?" And they said, "Why?" Well, I didn't know why. So I said, "Well, maybe we don't have to. We'll just don't tell anybody so nobody gets excited. This will be our surprise." So we hid the strudel up there when we got there. So on Saturday morning, after quite a beautiful Saturday, every time they went off in twos, I hollered, "It takes two to be Jesus." And all through the night, my parting words when I went to bed was, "It takes two to be Jesus." And then in the morning, we had communion. We went downstairs, we set the altar with two candles tipped over, just as we had done them in the snow. We put the bread and we put the wine down there. And then came time for preparation. And I taught the other fellow who had driven the other car how to toe rub. Mary Hinderly had taught me how to do a toe rub in the sauna. Have you ever had a toe rub in the sauna? Really not. That's Mary's secret. Maybe I let it out. I'm sorry, Mary. So anyway, this toe rub is a fantastic experience because you get the feeling that the toe bone is connected to the head bone. And you really are one. And so I taught this man, and he said he thought he knew how, and so I gave him one half, and I took the other half. So we went around, and the first person I came to was this girl who had been in the back seat. You know, the one I described before, part of the puzzle. And by this time, she was really quite beautiful. And as I was doing this, she was talking to me about herself, how she felt, her whole body. And so actually, this preparation was, and she kind of put her whole self together. This was quite a long preparation. We had to eliminate some of the parts of the service because this was taking a lot of time. I remember I came to this one girl. She wouldn't take off her hose, or anything, but she had a hole in it, and she would let me come through the hole. And I remember one girl then, we got to another one. She didn't have that hole, and so she wouldn't take off her hose or socks. So I just said, "I don't really know, you know, how much a part I have with you." You know, this really got her. You know, she just took it off, and we had quite a toe rub and quite a talk. Well, when we had smelled the wine, and then when we had drunk the wine, that takes twice as long. If you smell it first and then drink it, that takes twice as long. But sometimes
it's twice as good too. So, and it was homemade wine, and had all kinds of meaning. And when we finished eating the bread, there were so many crumbs on that little blanket that they said when it was all over, four girls got a hold of each corner and they said, "Oh, I know what we'll do. We'll feed the birds." And they went chasing up the stairway, you know, and they just took the leftovers and said, "Here, birds," you know. I thought, you know, this is just sort of St. Francis kind of thing. Just a once in your lifetime. And then when they did that, one girl said, sort of pondering, "Just think that even the birds could share in our communion." I haven't checked that out with many theologians, but I don't really intend to, because it's all right with me. The other night, when some of us took communion bread and wine to a sick in our home, I had a lot of bread left over, and when Willie came down from his chalet at about, 9 o'clock at night or whenever it was, I had some bread left on my plate, and he said, "What are you bringing the bread back to the service for?" I said, "I don't really know." Well, he said, "Certainly we don't need it back there in the village." So we set it out for the chipmunk. We hid it on a rock. And I said to Willie, I told Willie this story quickly, that I kind of like the idea that the leftovers might not be buried, you know, or poured away, but the leftovers might be enjoyed, either by the community itself or some of creation. Well, that's, I don't know, you know, in a way that's innovative in that it was an unusual altar, doesn't it? You know, that we demolished, kind of. We wiped it out, then it was very pretty the next morning, it was all smooth. You could start over. Anyone else? All right, fine, please.
I'd like to go a few, because even though you and the Anthropocentric and the Coma, they feel pretty close to you.
Good.
I've read that in the first
section
of one of
your
books. Fine. The book of Breakout, and the first one about Jesus being born in the box and breaking out of the box in the future. Well, our church just happened to put in a great big new future for the creation. And we've got a huge cardboard box that I call up and stuck in front of the altar and introduced to them by using a rewritten text and plagiarized text in that version. And then I had about four or five little kids come up. And we talked about boxes and about how these kids can be like being in the box because nobody can get in and play with you and you can't get out and play with anybody else. And we had a little boy sit in there and be in the pit box. And when he got well, he came out of the box.
Yeah.
And we talked about selfishness of being in the box. If you're selfish for your toys, nobody else can get in and play with you, and you can't get out and play with anybody else. And the little girl sat in the selfishness box. And she got over that, and she broke out of the box. And to summarize it by saying that Easter is for breaking out of boxes. And because Jesus was able to break out of his, he helped us break out. And luckily, I picked the right girl to be Jesus, because I asked the little girl to get in the box, and we closed it up tight. And at the end of the sermon, I said, "Now, when I holler out of Easter, you break out of the box." And so we closed it up, and I hollered out, "It's Easter," and this little girl came flying out of the box. And that was Easter.
If we could close with the singing of a song that some of you may have sung with me the other night. It's a new communion song that Bob Webster and I did. And when I say, I'll always call the next word out. If I say, sing bread, the next line you sing wine. Bread of God comes from the earth. Wine of God comes from the earth. Next stanza, God, and you will say man.
God is living in the meal. Man is living in the meal.
You will sing C.
Taste the word of God is near. See the word of God is near. So welcome to the table of the Lord.
That's the refrain.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll always call out the next word. You will sing wine.
Bread of God comes from the earth.
Wine of God comes from the earth.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
Man.
God is living in the meal.
Man is living in the meal.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
See,
taste the word of God is near.
See, the word of God is near.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
Four.
Break and take, and he is here.
Pour and take, and he is here.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
The man who wrote the music doesn't travel any more than a few blocks from his house. He won't come to our house and eat and drink because he's afraid. He's about my age. But he can go around the world. He can go to heaven and back as a composer. But he has the problem of traveling far. And the interesting thing is, I don't suppose he ever tobogganed either. But he's really taking us on a toboggan ride because he had the melody different. He had the rhythm different. And he put the surprise all at the top of the hill.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
And every time I have a feeling that we're taking his sleigh ride for him. And we're on that hill that he was afraid to go down when he was a child. Never did go down. But we're going down his hills. And this is often the case of people who are creative, that you're really operating out of their weakness. And you're really living with them through their weakness as well. Well, really, that's it. That's probably where the creativity takes place. And that's also where the spirit finds its strength. And I'd say to you, if you're looking for a creative spirit, don't look at your strength necessarily. Try and find your weaknesses and live with them. That's probably where it's at too, maybe more. Raised.
Dead was he, and now he lives.
Raised was he, and now he lives.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
Thank.
Ask the Lord, for he is good.
Thank the Lord, for he is good.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
I was really concerned if I had covered everything here for the theologians and for all the ordinary people. And I thought, well, I've got bread and wine, God and man, taste and see the word, break and pour, dead and raised, some who like to think of the death, some the resurrection, ask and thank. And I thought, well, when you go away with what you have, what do you do with what you take? You give it. So I thought, maybe there's room for one more, and I make seven, and seven is a good number. So you sing give.
Take the love and go in peace.
Give the love and go in peace.
So welcome to the table of the Lord.
Come. Because I thought that the 10-year-olds who would be communing would want a song that they could understand and they could memorize easily. and that wouldn't have too much of a load of hay unloaded in every stanza. And actually, if you look at it carefully someday, you'll find that it's a good teaching guide, and that every stanza really is kind of a lesson all by itself. So that while we sing, we can celebrate and learn. Because I think that learning and celebration really belong side by side. I think that for so long the church has educated in a non-celebrating way, it's just somewhat of a bore. And I think that if we could combine the two, we might enjoy our educating while we're celebrating, and vice versa. I'll see you there.